Welcome to the Brampton Talks podcast. This week, we're talking about a Brampton MP's recent resignation and the new Brampton Council's priorities over the next 100 days. Former Brampton MP Raj Graywal recently resigned his seat in the House of Commons, citing personal reasons. It later came to light that Graywal is currently struggling with a gambling addiction. Graywal's exodus from the party leaves a seat open in Brampton East and will likely result in a by-election to decide a new Liberal candidate leading into the 2019 election.
I like it. I think it's good that Raj resigned. For twofold reasons. First and foremost, I think it's easier to deal with an addiction when, with your family. But after that, I think it's important to note that when you do have something like a gambling addiction, when you do have something like lots of debt racked up, for the sake of that addiction, you end up in a situation where I don't think you can really govern effectively. And you could also be compromised by, folks like foreign powers or, all other political parties. And it really does get in the way of the governance of the country. I mean, if you're a sideshow. And I think he removed himself at a good time, only because it avoided a sort of sideshow that would have occurred on Parliament Hill.
Yeah, there's been a lot going on in the political world recently with sexual assault allegations. And even this last year, there's just been so much controversy around politics in Brampton. And it sounds to me like the Liberals really just didn't want to go into 2019 with a cloud over their heads. And that makes sense. I think a lot of people's hearts go out to Graywal because he really showed a lot of promise. He was a favorite MP in Brampton and one of the MPs people really felt like were representing Brampton, were doing really good things. He sat on the finance committee and the health committee and had a couple of other portfolios that were really impressive. So it's disappointing to see this happen, to somebody who showed so much promise. But at the end of the day, I think it was a smart decision to step down. And now it's a question of who's going to represent Brampton, because I think we're going to want somebody of that caliber level again.
Yeah. Full disclosure, Raj and I are very good friends. Obviously when I heard the news, it broke my heart. I probably never felt so upset in my life before. And I felt very, very bad, very, very sad for what kind of transpired, especially over the last couple of days in light of the news breaking. It's an addiction. It's a mental health issue. And I think there are some people in the political world, we tend to commodify our members of parliament, right? They become things. They become chess pieces on a larger game of politics or partisan politics. There's a red team, orange team, and a blue team, and you have these little pieces moving around that we tend to forget sometimes the human story behind this. We tend to forget, Raj's parents, his family, his wife, himself, right, his own health in light of all this stuff that's been coming out and the chatter online. And you can see the message boards and the comments and Twitter. It's hard to ignore that. Just in your day-to-day life and to be going through something so difficult so publicly, it's tough, right? It's tough as a friend. I can't even imagine how Raj is dealing with this at a personal level. But it's an addiction issue. It's a mental health issue. And it's one where, as a community, we should do everything in our power to ensure someone gets better and someone's able to fight that issue that they're going through right now. And hopefully they come back and come out of it stronger than ever.
Yeah, I think that's the hope. And like I said, he showed so much promise. And I think people generally in the community were very, very upset when they heard and want, to see such a young, vibrant person who has a lot to offer be able to come out of this on the other side better. And it's interesting, though, because we've seen a lot of controversy in politics recently. Tony Clement and the whole, controversy with him sending inappropriate photos. So part of me does wonder, somebody could do such inappropriate things and still keep their job on Parliament Hill, why, Graywal couldn't be in the same position to do that too. But at the end of the day, I think, like you said, it's a mental health issue and he needs to take time away to deal with that. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. But moving forward, the question is who will take his seat? The Liberals are going to want to go into 2019 strong across the board. Brampton is a Liberal, city at the federal level. So they're going to want to bring in somebody strong.
Yeah, there's some of the usual suspects are kind of floating around right now. And, you know, you have Parminder Singh, who recently ran for the Ontario Liberal Party and lost to Gurat. And I don't know if he came in second or third in that race. He also actually lost to Raj Garhwal in a nomination back for the 2015 candidacy for the federal Liberals. So Parminder Singh does have some experience in the riding. Maybe that's a name that can pop up that will go for it. You know, you have Councillor Vicky Tillong, who ran in the same area, lost. He's a Liberal. You know, maybe that's a position he's willing to take a shot at now. He obviously had no shame coming back again and running against Gurpreet. He did lose miserably. So that's something that I think the federal Liberals will be looking at as well. The more, you know, some more interesting kind of names that are floating around are guys like Gurpreet Tillong. As a sitting city councillor, he actually doesn't have to resign his seat while running federally until and if he wins and becomes an MP. Then he actually has to resign as a councillor. So he has some flexibility to jump in this as well if he wanted to. And Gurpreet is a candidate or is a person that has been courted, from my understanding, by all three parties at one point or another. And he stayed committed to the city level in municipal politics. But, you know, how interesting would that be if that's something that transpires?
Yeah, definitely. That could be an interesting leap for him. A loss for Councilla, potentially, if, you know, it were successful for him. Some people have thrown out Linda Jeffries' name, although I doubt, you know, I think she's pretty content with where she is right now and probably wants to take a break. So I don't see that happening, but it will definitely be an interesting thing to watch to see who they pick. They're definitely going to want to go into 2019 strong and be able to bring somebody to the table who can win.
It also opens up a little bit the conversation with the NDP, because at one point the NDP was avoiding Brampton East because Raj Garhwal, as we kind of mentioned, is a very strong and popular MP for the area. Right. So he wasn't someone that would be easily defeated. And now you have a situation where he's no longer there. He's not no longer there in the picture as the Liberal MP of the area. That opens up the doors a little bit more for an NDP person to take a shot. Traditionally, not traditionally, but at least in the couple of years, in the last couple of election cycles, the NDP have been done very well in the area since Jagmeet Singh kind of arrived in town. Jagmeet has said he's sticking to Burnaby. Which some people have said is a stupid decision.
It's a bad idea. He should run in his home riding.
Well, yeah, I think he's committed. I don't think he wants to be seen as someone who's backing away from his commitment to Burnaby.
Flip-flopping a little bit. But I mean, I don't think he thought that he'd be able to contend with Raj. And that was why he made that decision. And just days after he makes that decision, that's when, you know, Raj resigned. And I guess that sucks to be him.
That must have been sort of strange high stakes politics happening, like the Liberals I think waiting until Jagmeet kind of sets in stone where he's going to run before even dropping this news story.
Yeah, it is politics, and they're all going to be they're all going to take whatever opportunities they can to have a leg up. So of course they wouldn't want Jagmeet coming back to Brampton East. That could be a slam dunk win for him when you don't have somebody as strong as Raj Garhwal at the table.
Yeah, it really opens up the playing field nice and wide. I think there's going to be tons of speculation. We are entering into the Christmas holiday season here soon, so I think things will quiet down a bit until the new year, where we probably see a little bit more clarity on what's going on and what's happening. I think in light of all this, you know, I think there's an obligation to speak about this, and there's an obligation to speak about what happens next. But let's not, you know, I think this is a good example of a story where you don't want to lose the human story as well in all of this. And it's something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. But then also, you know, within your own families and with their own networks, there's a lot of people struggling with a lot of different mental health issues. And, you know, how can we as a society do a better job of being supportive of those folks that are going through the issues like that?
December 3rd is fast approaching and Brampton's new council will be inaugurated. The question is, what will be their main priorities?
This is like one of those fun, what are they going to do in the first 100 days?
I know, speculation. I love it. But I think we should all maybe pick a priority and we can focus on that, because I think I have my, I know what I want them to focus on.
I know what I'm what I want them to focus on.
They've got a heavy load. They've got housing. They've got transit. They've got cannabis, which is going to be a big one. Deciding what to do with private cannabis stores. They have a lot of stuff coming up. And
this is a kind of like a watershed moment for the city, right? You have a dynamic new council. You have a brand new mayor. And you have a city that's quite frankly in a transition from suburban dystopia to hopefully urban utopia. You can
tell like the apocalypse happened here or something. Yeah.
So, Shishio, how about you start? Let's have you start.
I should not be the one starting. Okay, my take is first 100 days, you got to tackle zoning.
Ah, God damn it. Boring.
All afternoon.
All right, anyways, continue.
Oh, no, absolutely. Like, Nikita, I mean, you have a lot to say about what the VR arcade went through on Kennedy and Queen.
Yeah, it's just one of the businesses in Brampton that has struggled. You know, I believe they originally were supposed to open in May. They didn't open until late summer because of all the hoops that they had to jump through. And they're not the only business that's had to go through that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like in Brampton, if you want to start a business in an existing plaza, you have to first look at the acceptable uses within that plaza, right? So when we look at a virtual reality arcade, well, first and foremost, this is some future tech. It doesn't even exist yet in Brampton. So how do you set that up? Well, you have to go to the city. So what you're essentially doing here is you have to go to the city, tell them that in that particular plaza, and in this case, the one on Queen and Kennedy, needs to be adjusted. The zoning needs to be adjusted to allow for virtual reality arcades as an acceptable use. Think about it for a second. You have to ask the city for permission before you can start a business in the city. And then the city will ask you what kind of business are you starting. But really, should the city have any business asking you this?
Well, and there's a longer story here too of like City Hall just has this reputation of not being business friendly in Brampton.
Yeah.
Like,
there's so many hoops to jump
through. How do you attract innovation to a city when you have to go through a government bureaucrat before you can even set up a business, right?
Yeah, and even people who want to do like, so developers, and I know we like to make fun of developers.
Well, yeah.
We like to call them evil.
They got the dough though.
But a lot of them want to do cool projects. A lot of them do. A lot of them, they want to make money, obviously. We're in a capitalist free market society. but at the same time, they want to have cool projects because they sell better. So even if you talk to developers here, they're so frustrated in working in the city of Brampton. They rather go to places like Markham and Vaughan.
Or Caledon.
Yes. Where they can just turn things around quickly. Anything in this city takes way too long. At least the perception exists amongst the development community and business community that it takes way too long to do anything here.
Not just
the perception, it's the reality. And they hired an expediter a couple of years ago to help make these projects go faster. The question is, I don't know how effective that person has been. See,
the problem here is that we're just trying to hire an expediter to expedite a, you know, government bureaucracy. At the end of the day, if you just let the owners of plazas decide who gets to be their tenant, for the most part, and as long as that tenant's not going to burn the place down, I think that's just fair. I mean, that's just the way things should be. I don't think the government should get involved and look at the piece of property and say, well, you can't put your veterinary clinic there, right?
It's like, yeah, these guys are not putting, they're not going to put a refinery in the middle of a residential neighborhood goddamn plaza, right? Like, it's like you have some reasonable expectations around this thing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, these people are going to do what's in their best interest as well. And at the end of the day, they're the ones who's investing the money. They're investing their time and effort. If you put too many red tape and roadblocks around folks, and if our zoning is just archaic and our system is just slow, we're getting left behind by Mississauga, Markham, Vaughan, Toronto. We're getting left behind by everyone in the GTA. Yeah.
And not just that. All of this is just for free parking. Right. And I remember there was a previous episode where we talked about this. But the reason why we only have one story plazas is because of, you know, egregious parking requirements, free parking requirements. And so that's why we're sustaining the system of asking the government first for permission. So really, we have one major trade-off here to consider. Do we want free parking, ample free parking everywhere, or do we want an innovative economy? There is no one there. You can't have both. It just can't be done.
Yeah, and I think that there's been some improvement. I know when they went through the 2040 vision exercise, they really did look very closely at what they wanted the city to look like. And I hope that that sort of influenced how they look at zoning. I know Rob Elliott, the new chief planner, has been going through and rezoning some things and working on expediting sort of how we do things. But I mean, I still think we have a long ways to go, and what this council prioritizes will be what staff prioritizes.
Well, here's what I'll say. We have around over 100 zones. If council can cut that down to 20, and that's an arbitrary number, yes, but cut it down to something much, much lower. And at the end of the day, just work with those, grandfather in the old zoning codes, but then any new zoning or any new rezoning should be underneath the new zones that have been developed, right? And this should reduce a lot of red tape if you can do it that way.
Well, and this ties in really nicely because Patrick Brown was pretty vocal about how City Hall does zoning and planning, and he wanted to make the city the fastest approval process in the country. Now, the only thing we got to consider in all this is, you know, sometimes, you know, you have to put checks and balances in, right? Like, why did we lose so much employment land to residential back in the day where we're now kicking ourselves because we got rid of prime real estate for stupid, you know, like low density housing? So there is a fine gray area here that we got to do it smart. We have to be innovative. And there's a lot of great models out there that we can mimic.
Yeah, and that's why we need things like mixed use zoning, right? Because the big problem with, I mean, employment lands, we need them, but oftentimes the way suburbia develops them is they build massive office parks.
Right.
Not all businesses need a massive office park building, right? There are some that do, but not all businesses. And if you just, you know, create the conditions necessary for people to set up, you know, smaller scale office towers, you can still attract, you know, a considerable amount of business, right? We have a lot of professionals living in Brampton, right? Accountants, lawyers, and whatnot, right? And right now, they have to compete with grocers for, you know, the first floor of retail space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this kind of leads nicely into, Nikita, your priority. Because what good zoning and good planning and good development you need?
Transit.
Yes.
Okay, LRTs. So there's a few layers to this issue that council's going to have to tackle. The biggest being the LRT. That's been the topic of conversation for the last 4 years. It ain't going away anytime soon. So I guess for me, I'll be looking to see, A, what does council decide to do with the Hure Ontario Main LRT? Will they bring the Main Street route back on the table? We know that they're currently studying two routes on McLaughlin and Kennedy, and that's costing the city $4.4 million to do that. And I think they're still early in the stages of planning that. So will council decide to squash that? Will they just say HMLRT, the Hure Ontario, we want the Main Street route, that's all we want, and leave it to that? Maybe they'll take a softer approach and ask them to reconsider the Main Street LRT route. So that will be an interesting thing. Transit is a big topic of conversation. Obviously in Brampton, we know that Brampton Transit grew 17%, which is the highest in Canada. That just goes to show, you know, car insurance rates here are crazy in the city. People can't necessarily afford a car. They want transit. They want better transit. So the LRT on Main, that will, I think, you know, we'll see what council does with that. I'm going to be watching closely. But I think the other thing too is that LRT on Queen Street or some sort of rapid transit on Queen Street. We know that
absolutely. That would be great.
Yeah. I mean, right now we have a connection to the subway. Mind you, a long and, you know, it takes a little while to get down to Vaughan to get to that connection. But Vaughan's already building a BRT system with dedicated lanes on Highway 7. So will Brampton follow suit? We know that, you know, Doug Ford is tightening the purse strings. So an LRT down Queen Street all the way to Vaughan is probably not a realistic goal.
We're probably just going to have a subway.
Yeah, a subway right. Bramley City Centre will get a stop. Bramley Go will get a stop. And, you know, downtown Brampton will get a stop for a cost of $15 billion.
Yes.
Yeah. Go, it's $500 million per kilometer to build a subway. It's roughly craziness. Speaking, that's not counting stations.
Yep.
That's not counting overruns. And that's at today's dollars.
Yeah, and that's because we have to dig through bedrock. Remember, the drilling machines essentially heat up and you have to turn them off for a bit before you can drill again.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes it expensive to build subways in the GTA.
But so getting back to the point.
Yeah, for a 1 kilometer subway, which would be $500 million, Brampton could build a dedicated BRT system down to Vaughan, which is a very realistic goal. Potentially, that could be an option. So we'll be looking to see what council prioritizes. A recent report from staff showed that 70% of morning traffic travels to Mississauga in the morning. So although two-way all-day go is a priority for Brampton, less people are going to Toronto every day. So we'll have to see what will they do with the LRT, what will they do with Queen Street to create better transit, and what will they do with connectivity to Toronto.
I want to interject here. you know, are there any Zoom lines being planned? We can expedite them, or we can take
existing
Zoom lines and see what happens if we were to, say, double their frequency.
So we have the airport Zoom being built right now, but it's not going all the way to the airport. No, it's going to Malton Goal, I believe. No. So I think they'll push that eventually.
Absolutely.
But no, Paul Vasanti, Councillor Vasanti, or Councillor-elect, he's not official yet, I guess. He shared a very interesting graphic the other day showing where the employment numbers are. Like most Bramptonians are going to Mississauga to work, right? I think most Bramptonians are going to Mississauga to shop. I live right at the border, so I go into Heartland and Square One as much as I do to Bramley City Centre. It's almost as if Brampton is not really a suburb of Toronto as much as it's a suburb of Mississauga.
No, the connectivity is so important in the region, right? And that's what sort of sparked all this conversation around a subway to the suburbs, is that the acknowledgement that we do need better connectivity amongst the cities.
And I might be a little more aggressive on this, but I believe this council, one of the first orders should be cancel the stupid EAs into the alternative routes that we already know are bad, and we're just trying to force them to make at least look half decent.
It's just to make Elaine Moore happy.
Essentially, you know what? Elaine Moore's gone.
Shots
don't worry.
Fired. Bang, okay? Bang.
So that's one thing. And the second thing is we have a plan. The pieces are in place to make HMLRT shovel ready if our council agrees to it. Yes, is Ford going to, you know, rain down cash on us today to build this LRT? Hell, he may even cancel Mississauga's part. However, if we have a project ready, you know, there's nothing to say Ford lasts only one term. He may last for 40 terms, right? You can't say any of that. Yeah. But he can last one term. You have, let's say, an NDP government comes back. Or a Liberal
LRT
government.
LRT is all over the place.
Or even a PC government under a different leadership may come back and say, you know what, we want to make this our priority. You guys are shovel ready. Let's start going. Right? Yeah, absolutely. But we have to get those pieces in place now.
That has been a big
challenge. We're wasting time. We're absolutely wasting time and money.
We can take the lead on this and make sure that, you know, our plan, if we really do want to have a Made in Brampton plan, let's make sure this LRT extends, like we have it shovel ready all the way up to Mayfield if you really want to.
Absolutely. Yeah, what's stopping that from happening? And Councillor Medeiros did put an amendment to the motion during the HMLR debate about adding a loop in and around downtown a little bit, like kind of expanding it. You can add to this piece, but the main spine, the main artery remains the Huron-Ontario main light rail transit route, right? Which goes right up Highway 10 Main Street.
Yeah.
So
there's a reason why there's a Zoom bus on that route already and not on McLaughlin or Kennedy. Although you could argue that Kennedy does probably deserve a Zoom route at some point. The ridership's very high there, as well as Dixie Road. So we'll have to see what council decides should be some other priority routes as well.
Well, and you have a council where you have a majority of councillors that either A, voted in favor of HMLRT or deputed in favor of the HMLRT. So we actually have a majority pro-HMLRT team on council right now.
So
now,
I really do think that will be the big thing to see what they decide to do.
My fear is a lot of politicians, when they get elected, they become cautious all of a sudden.
It's like,
right?
Take some risks,
you know,
y'all.
No voters want here. Guts, right? We want people with spines.
Just remember, you know, if you're feeling cautious, remember that the people that will use the HMLRT don't have time to message you and complain about the HMLRT.
Yeah.
Yes.
They also don't necessarily have time for scenic routes down McLaughlin Road and Kennedy Road. They want
to
get from
point
A to point
B. The people that will use
B.
that thing will love you, and they're not the, you know, folks living.
Well, like, you know, 70% of Bramptonians supported HMLRT.
That's true, exactly.
And a majority, it was like 55% of downtown residents supported the HMLRT. You know, you can't let the vocal minority derail your transit initiatives.
The people, and remember, you know, our average age in Brampton is around 35, right?
Yes.
The average age of the people that deputed against the HMLRT is, you know, much, 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 much higher.
Yeah, there was this great graphic going around during the election. It didn't really catch stream. No one really pushed it, unfortunately. But it had a snapshot of everyone that deputed in favor of the LRT beside a snapshot of everyone who deputed against it. First of all, it was like 10-1. But the diversity, like, that you saw in age and your background and gender on the four side versus the complete lack of diversity, forget about race, just age. Like, there was no diversity in age on the no side, essentially. And when you could put those things side by side, it was so visually stimulating, looking at that thing and be like, holy shit, like, we screwed up big time. We screwed up the future for our city, and we kind of failed the residents of the city in a very large way.
And final point, trains are cool.
Oh, trains are hip.
They're awesome.
Hippity hop, man. All the trains are wicked. Man,
they are so cool. You want one.
Yeah, right,
definitely want one.
Hundo P. Hundo P. Go for it. So that kind of leads now to my priority that I'm kind of a little passionate about. Well, you guys also took the good ones, so. no, but, okay, I'll give it an easy one. I'm going to cheat here. Ryerson University, make that happen. Make the Innovation Center. Make all that happen. It seems like it is. I have full faith in this council to pull that off. So that's just an easy one. I'm just going to put that out there just so we say it.
Cheater, you get two.
Yeah, but I'll give a little more of a niche one. Independent Auditor General. I'm a strong believer in having an independent auditor general. There was an ombudsman report that was put out during Mayor Jeffrey's time in the mayor's seat that recommended from the Ombudsman of Ontario that Brampton install a permanent independent auditor general that is completely independent of the staff, the CEO, or any departments or politicians. You got to remember, if you rewind even a little further back than that, you had the McCarter report. Which kind of exposed how crappy...
Everybody should read that, by the way. Yeah, honestly, read that.
So what McCarter Report said was... McCarter was a former Auditor General. He looked at the books and he clearly stated that Brampton's finances are in disarray. Right?
Prior to 2014.
Our credit rating was slipping. We were tripling negative, trending downwards at that time with Standard & Poor. Like, everything was just a complete...
Our city reserves, our money was at an all-time low.
And I think even today, I think if you ask most Bramptonians, they would say, we don't really have faith in our city hall and spending our money effectively. So what's the solution? Independent Auditor General. And yes, staff, there is an internal auditor, that's fine and dandy. But there's nothing to suggest that for a corporation as large as Brampton, the third largest city in the GTA, the ninth largest in the country, one of the fastest growing, tons of development happening everywhere, tons of land still open up for development. You need independent oversight on how the city handles its finances, on how it handles Bramptonian taxpaying dollars. So it's going to cost, I think it was something like $200,000 a year, $300,000 a year to uphold an independent auditor general. I'm sure if you ask Bramptonians, hey, all 600,000 of you, will you guys pitch in 50 cents a year to ensure we can hire an independent auditor general to oversee our almost $1 billion budget, I think it is. Yeah, like that's not that difficult. Fine, screw 600,000. The 300,000 or so that can vote, I'll pitch in a dollar. All right, for sure, I'll give you $10. I'll cover 10 people for me. That's not that hard of an ask to put on taxpayers, especially when it's being used to oversee the spending of the rest of their tax dollars, which is like I think close to $1 billion, if I'm correct. If not, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions.
Lots of money, basically. And this is something that Linda Jeffrey tried multiple times to make happen, and the last council didn't agree that we needed one. They used money, I think, is the biggest.
Councillor Pleshy really did not want that.
Yeah, he used the money piece, and he said the internal auditor is good enough. We don't need an independent auditor. And then Elaine Moore said something along the lines of, if we put an independent auditor general in, then it just makes Brampton look bad that, you know, what's going on here, that they need an independent auditor general. Like, that's kind of stupid.
How can you ever say, like, we have too much oversight of the money that we're spending? We're being too responsible and too accountable to taxpayers. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, the quote was, it reinforces negative opinions about the city.
I'm pretty sure an independent auditor would do the opposite of that.
Well, here's the story from Brampton Gardening, right? And this is what Elaine Moore was saying. The truth is we are on an upward trend, said Regional Councillor Elaine Moore, of a motion to rehire former auditor, Ontario Auditor General Jim McCartan for $60,000 to review the progress since the 2015 report. And then she later on voted against the independent auditor general as well. So the point is, it doesn't matter if you're an upward trend. It doesn't matter if you have a new and great council. It doesn't matter if you have a new mayor. The independent oversight, again, is independent. And it's just a nice little safety net to ensure that taxpayer dollars are being spent wisely. And psychologically, if you're sitting in City Hall, you'll think twice before kind of misspending or spending money on kind of frivolous items, because you know it'll come up in an independent auditor report.
Yep.
Yeah, and like I said, I just don't think you could ever say you're being too accountable to the taxpayers. We know that before 2013, before Linda Jeffrey came in, there was a real lack of trust at what was happening at City Hall. And there still is. You know, people still feel like, oh my gosh, I'm paying all these taxes. Where is my money going? And over the last 4 years, we've seen a big improvement. The credit rating is back. There's been tons of stuff that's happened that's been really good. And as far as like controversies and misspending goes, we really haven't heard a lot of that happening the last 4 years. but we can never be too accountable to the taxpayer. I think we need to, you know, it would never hurt to maintain that status quo of being in the good books. So I would say let's do it.
And that vote was lost 7-4 the last time it happened. I think Fortini, Gurpreet, and the mayor and Martin were the ones who voted in favor. So you have 3 votes. You need 3 more, and this thing could become real.
And that is all for today. Thanks for listening in to the Brampton Talks podcast. For more details about any of the stories or topics we discussed this week, check out Bramptonist.com.